All right, hi, I'm Brant Adams, and I'm going to introduce Nico Lindsay, who's going to talk to you about self-driving cars. All right, Nico's graduated from the University of Toledo and with an information systems degree. He's also got a master's degree in math, which is... also, he's a black belt in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, so don't give him any crap. They'll tie you in a knot, and you won't not even miss, forget what he's saying. So without further ado, here he is, and you can get going. He's going to tell you everything you ever wanted to know about self-driving cars and probably a whole lot more.
Yeah.
All right.
So, I guess a little bit more about me. I work for a company called Embrace Pet Insurance. It's health insurance for your pet, which might sound weird to some people, but it's a fantastic company. And if you're interested, check out their website. And, you know, we've never done any accessibility testing. I didn't think about this until I got here. So if you go on there and try to make a quote and it's awful, shoot me a message. We'll see what we can do. Most companies. Oh, don't be too opinionated. We'll try.
I do accessibility testing for a living.
Oh, do you?
Yes.
Oh, we should talk then. Because the only thing we've attempted to accessibility test is color blindness. And obviously, no, enough, right? But in your business case, it's always the first thing that gets cut.
Oh.
Yeah. Everything's in a hurry. So... anyways, I do not professionally work on self-driving cars. I would call myself an extreme enthusiast. There are these things they call MOOCs, and it's massive online courses. So they're basically college courses online that most people can sign up for really cheap. I took a course through a company called Udacity on self-driving cars and how to make them, how to work, and I've done like 2 out of 3 semesters. But I don't work on them professionally, but I do. I'm a software developer and a software architect. I've been doing that for over a decade, and I spend probably 2/3 of my time doing the software stuff, and the other 1/3 doing the AI stuff, which we're going to talk about a lot today. So let's get to today. What we're going to talk about? We've got 1 hour and 15 minutes. That's a long time. So, talking about just self-driving cars and a few definitions, we will have a lot more time left. So I broadened the topic a little bit, and I decided to kind of try to demystify some of this artificial intelligence, what it is, because it's in the news a lot. Definitely right now, it's just such a growing field the last few years. It's huge. So I'm gonna get deep a little bit. I'm gonna get technical, use some math stuff. And if you don't understand it all, that's great. But maybe you can see like how this stuff isn't just, you know, how this stuff really works. And it might not be as hard as you might think. And then we're gonna talk about self-driving car stuff. And like I said, I am gonna get a little technical sometimes. That's okay. We'll be okay. Thank you. Okay. So let's talk about artificial intelligence. It's hard to hear how loud I'm being, so if I'm not loud enough, feel free just to like tell me, because I like to sit back. I move a lot in fiddle. So, artificial intelligence, what is it? First of all, like, these are the definitions that I completely made up. Like, what is intelligence? Essentially, intelligence is making decisions based on your past experiences. Like, you guys are here today because some past experience told you it was a good idea. Somebody, one of your friends told you, whatever. Everything you do is like an aggregate of all your past experiences. That's all real intelligence is. Of course, the choices have to be relevant to whatever situation you're in. And artificial intelligence is almost the same thing. Except instead of a person making the decision, it's an algorithm. And I think algorithm gets thrown out a lot. And if I do say it wrong, I'm like, wow. She's like, well, what's an algorithm, right? It's somebody thinks deep computer code. An algorithm is just step-by-step on how to complete something. So if you're following a recipe to make a cake, that's an algorithm.
Yep.
So don't get too worried about like that definition. It's not as scary as people say. It's just some computer science people like to use the, I don't know, sound a little more serious. So, artificial intelligence, instead of a person, it's an algorithm making these decisions. And instead of using its past experiences, it's using past data. So, all of these things are just using past data to make decisions based on whatever situation they're in now. Nothing fancy. And a lot of people, when they think of artificial intelligence, I bet definitely movie fans, sci-fi fans, the first thing they think of is like Skynet or something like that, right? Skynet and the Terminator is like this artificial intelligence and society humans shouldn't be around, and they go and try to murder everybody, right? That's something I don't think we have to fear anytime soon. I think we're okay with that. And then you've got to have this opposite end, which I'll call it the optimistic artificial intelligence. And if you watch Star Trek at all, like, Data's on there, and he's this android. He's always trying to, like, be more human-like. But in reality, these things aren't just, like, performing at human level. They're so much better than human. Everything Data does, he's like a walking Wikipedia with... he knows everything. He's stronger. So all these things perform at super human level. So they're not just... artificial intelligence, it's general super artificial intelligence. And we call these things something like a data. That's like general intelligence. So it's not, it's this thing that can do multiple tasks. A lot of the AI stuff around here, is they're only designed to do one task. And a lot of these things we have now, some of the more popular ones that are, I'll call super artificial intelligence, but they're not general, but they perform this one task well. A few years ago, there was this program, this chess program called Big Blue, made by IBM, and it beat these chess grandmasters like 4 out of 5 times. And that performs way above human level now. And there's some arguments if that's actually AI or not for various reasons I don't get into. It's one of those things like everybody thinks it's artificial intelligence until they do it. And like retrospectively, they're like, no, that's not what we're going for. A really popular one now, if you ever heard of the game called Go, it's like exponentially harder to like work as a computer than something like chess. And Google, about a year and a half ago, made this artificial intelligence model. I'm going to be using that term model a lot, and I'll explain more a little bit what it actually means. But it's this AI model that plays this game Go. And computer scientists 5 years ago thought this was going to be an impossible problem to solve. And it played some grandmaster world champion. It won 4 out of 5 times. And so it wasn't perfect, but boy, was it pretty good. And then 6 months later, all of a sudden there's rumblings on the internet that there's some young prodigy who beat these 50 grandmasters in a row online at this game Go. And Google came out and was like, yeah, that was me. So, there. And then there are certain tests to see if something is general intelligence. And you might have heard something called like the Turing test. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure these things are a hassle for the visually impaired, something like a CAPTCHA online. I gotta imagine that's a very challenging thing to deal with sometimes. Mm-hmm. But that's all that's doing. It's trying to decide if you're a human or not a human. So that's an example of like what a Turing test would be. My favorite test they call it the IKEA test. And if a robot can come and open up a box and put together like an IKEA table, it's considered general intelligence. Like,
Wow.
So let's talk about the things that. The technologies under artificial intelligence. I consider artificial intelligence like this big umbrella, and there's several different technologies under this umbrella. One's called NLP, and it just stands for natural language processing. I'm sure you guys use natural language processing a lot, and it's basically the ability for a computer to hear what you say, take it, translate it to something the computer can understand, and run with it. Alexa, your Echo does that. Your Google assistants will do that. And I don't know if you know, but I'm sure you realize in the last 5 years, they are exponentially better. My Google Home does not miss a word right now. It is absolutely incredible. and we'll talk about a little bit of the technologies on how that works with math in a little bit. But that's natural language processing. Then there's another one called natural language generation, and that's the other end of that. So processing, you take it, the computer takes it, translates something it can understand and does work on it, and natural language generation turns that into text. Turns it into a response we'll understand too. Like if I say send a text to Brant, it's going to reply back like, oh, the text was sent to Brant. That's natural language generation. And then the two I deal with the most are computer vision, which are giving eyes to the computers. It's letting the computer see the world. It doesn't necessarily mean a camera. There's several ways for the computers to see the world, maybe like a radar, so, something like that. And then machine learning. Machine learning is, that's when I say I spend a third of my time doing other things, this is what I do. It's data science, machine learning, and it's all the rage right now in my little world. So let's get in deep. We're going to get in deep about machine learning because we have the time. So machine learning has this general workflow. And it's basically, there's different kinds of learning, but for the purposes of this talk, most of my talk will be, again, what they call supervised learning. And supervised learning is just taking past data and making a model. So this workflow for machine learning is gather data, use an algorithm, and you make a model. And I think the best example, a good example of this is close to something I've had to do at work. And it made a really big impact at work. So let's say you're somebody, you work in an office, and it's a big office, so you have a lot of travel and expenses, T&E expenses, and you've got to keep track of these things. And your work decides, hey, I'm going to, for your receipts for your restaurants, when you go out to eat, I'll pay for your food, I'll pay for your dessert, but I'm not going to pay for your alcohol. So we need some way to look at these things. So what, right now, we can pretend what somebody does. Some, I don't know, intern has to look at every receipt and say, all right, the steak is food. And then it says, all right, the martini is alcohol. The Pepsi is a drink. The cake is a dessert. And they do this over and over and over, right? They do this thousands of times. And what you end up with is with a data set that has information such as steak, and it has a label such as food, or such as a martini is an alcohol beverage. And we need to know this because we're not going to pay for the alcohol, right? And so you take that labeled data and you throw it into an algorithm. And we're going to get deep about algorithms. That's when the math starts, but we're not going to do that quite yet. And then it spits out this model. And this model is it's a metaphorical black box, but it's essentially a box that now I can take a receipt that doesn't have any labels to it, such as alcohol or a cake or alcohol dessert or whatever. I take every line item, I put them in this box, and it spits me out a label. So I take martini, I put it in my box, and it says martini is alcohol. So it's making a prediction now. I'm doing something with my AI model that somebody was once doing by hand. And I know this one sounds like it wouldn't be like that big of a deal, but this sort of thing could be like really, really impactful to a company, just classifying something on line items. So here's the thing, though. We need to know how accurate this model is going to be, so we need to know how well it's actually predicting these things. So we have our data set with labeled data. What a lot of what people will do in the beginning is they'll say, okay, I'm just going to take the labels off my data and plug it in my model and see what it predicts. Does that make sense? So I'm going to see what it predicts, and then I'm going to compare its prediction against what is already known, because that was the thing I had. So, and what happens when you do that is you'll find out that your model is like 95% correct, which isn't like, it sounds really good, but the problem is what you did is a little bit flawed. Because what you did is you took the same data that you put in your algorithm to create the model to test the model. Of course it's going to be really good at that, right? So then you do other things like cleaning up your data. So what you do is you'll take your data that you initially have instead, and you split it up. And traditionally, it's like 70-30. So I'm going to take 70% of my data. For example, if I have 100 line items, and usually it's not 100. Usually it's like 100,000. I have like 100,000 line items. I split it up into 70,000 and 30,000. And then I train my model on some of that, and then I test it on the other. But anyway, so we get data, put an algorithm, create the model. And now here comes the fun stuff. I think it's fun. That's the algorithms. So there are really two different kinds of algorithms in this AI world right now. And one of them is called, I kind of call them the classical statistical algorithms. Does anybody here have like ever taken a statistics class? All right, so a couple. So, well, one of the first things they teach you in a statistics class, and this is true AI, is something called nonlinear regression. And it's not as fancy as you might think, okay? So basically, linear regression is, it's a line, and it's like a line of regression. Let me explain it real quick. Way back, could be a long time for some of you guys, and junior high or high school, you had these graphs, and you would like they would give you a point, such as 2, 3, and you plot it on the graph. You go over two dots and go up 3, and you make a dot. It's like graphing 101, and they give you another point, 5, 6. So you go over 5, up 6, and you make a dot. And so that's kind of where linear regression starts. But what we can do, we can say, all right, this bottom line that we went over, that represents, like, let's say, square feet of a house. And then the line that you go up could represent prices of a house. So you might, I say intuition would probably say, Grant, what do you think? How does square feet of a house relate to prices of a house?
Yeah, I mean, obviously would, because it's more.
Yeah, the more square feet, the higher the value of the house, right? So that's what happened. So let's go ahead and pretend. All right, Brian, you got to follow me on this one. Yeah. I'm going to put you in the spot for a quick question.
Pay attention.
Yeah. So when you go, let's say you have a house that's 800 square feet, and these are houses that have sold in the past, and you want to put this on this graph. You go over 800 square feet, then you're going to go up to, let's say, $100,000. So over 800, up 1,000, you make it up. And let's say we have another house that's 800 square feet, and we know it, that one, you go over 800, but it sold for 120,000. So we know one 800 square feet house sold for 100,000, and the other one sold for 120,000. Brant, what's your intuition on what an 800 square foot house is worth? You know, one's 120 and one's 100.
Somewhere between 100 and 120,000.
Yeah, it's probably right in the middle, right? It's just the average. And that's all linear regression is. It's just like that average of the dots. So instead of being two dots, it's like 100 dots or 1,000 dots. So I know that a 1,000 square foot house is worth, I don't know, 150,000. So I go over 1,000 and I just plot all this data. And I'm just going to try to draw a line through all this data that, like, is the most average of all those things. And now, when I went into a price for a house, I'm just going to say, I have a 950-square-foot house, and I go over 950, and I go up to that line, and wherever that line is on that up-and-down axis, I can say, oh, it's worth that much money. That's linear regression. It is really easy once it's laid out, and it is an artificial intelligence. It's doing work that somebody was doing before, and it's using it based on. Of course, there's more than the square feet that tells you the value of the house, right? You've got things like number of bedrooms, maybe the size of your plot, things like that. All those things, by the way, that like make up the, I guess, the price for the house in that situation, those are called features. I may use that term later, but it's just features are the things that like go into it. So that's like your traditional, classical, statistical thing. But now here's the new age stuff. And it's called deep learning. Has anybody heard anyone who say deep learning, neural net, or machine learning?
Yeah.
If you watch anything on any tech show, if you read any tech website, it's probably up there every day. It's how Siri understands you, or Google understands you. It's going to be so persuasive for just to be everywhere in our lives soon enough. So The thing about deep learning is, though, it's been around since the 1950s. The problem is, deep learning requires two things that we didn't have until now. Deep learning requires lots and lots and lots of data. And so with a self-driving car, it requires lots of data, lots of miles on the road, millions of miles on the road, and that those things have to be recorded and somewhere and saved somewhere. And of course, the more data you have, the more processing power you need to like process and handle that data. So the kind of goes one. Yeah, big data, exactly. Big data is a pretty popular term on the TV too, although it's used incorrectly a lot. So these things take lots of horsepower to run, and you need lots of data. And we didn't have the combination of that stuff until probably about 2010, 2011. And that was like 5 years ago, 6 years ago. This stuff is like in its infancy, and it's starting to like take over already, if you ask me. To give you an example of like how much horsepower you need, there is this benchmarking tool. It's like this competition for people who make these deep learning models, and it's called ImageNet. And ImageNet is a data set, because like I said, our flow is data, algorithm, model. So they give you a data set, and it's like a million pictures. And each one of these pictures have something like a bike, or a ball, or a person, or a dog, or a cat. So they all have something in them. And they could have between one of 1,000 different items in it. So they have this huge data set, and they want you to train your model on that data, and then they're going to give you some other pictures that don't have those labels on it, and you need to predict what's in that picture. So what happened is, in 2012, somebody came up with a new technique of doing this. So the success rate of somebody of predicting these objects in these pictures accurately in 2012 was 84%. That's pretty good. They consider human level like 90%. Humans aren't perfect by any means at these types of tasks. So 90% there is human. Well, it was a breakthrough that they had. They made a new kind of network. So they got second. The year before that, the winner was 74%. So in 1 year, they gained like 10% accuracy on this thing. And I guess where I'm going with that is, there's, like we talked about the general intelligence earlier, and when is that going to happen? Some people say like never. Some people say 100 years. Some people say 30 years, whatever. It's all, I've seen anywhere between 5 years and X amount of years. And I don't think the optimist in me, I guess, is we're probably much, much closer than people realize, because I think there's these people working in these labs, doing these new things, and making these big breakthroughs. And going from 74% to 84%, that, I know that sounds like a 10% gain, but that's actually a really big breakthrough for this. And I just think, oh, man. And another example of a breakthrough, the year I was talking about that the guy got 84%, that was 2012. Last year, they talked about shutting it down because these models were so good they didn't think they could get any better. Last year, somebody got an accuracy of 96%. So 6% above human level.
Wow.
That's crazy. So they were going to shut it down, kind of like the patent office would maybe shut down at one time for lack of innovation, right? Somebody said, okay, I think I can do a little better. So they just released it. It wasn't even the competition part, and it was like a 97%. So they got a 1% gain when everybody thought it was impossible to do anything more. It's just, it's a substantial thing while working towards 100. It'll never be 100. If you're making an AI thing and it says 100%, you screwed up somewhere. Yeah. It's lying to you. Don't trust it.
Yeah.
All right, so here, I made little note cards just to kind of keep myself on track. And this little note card here is the most technical note card. So I hope you guys like it. So these deep learning things, I kind of keep talking about, and I gave you an example of classical statistical stuff with the linear regression. But these deep learning things, sometimes they're called neural networks. And the reason they call neural networks is when they graph them out, they're like little circles, and then they have lines connecting them. And when you draw them out, they kind of look like neurons being connected by synapses. I'm not a biology person, so I think I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
But they look like how your brain works. So they graph them out. And to picture them, like, picture a couple columns. And in the first column, there's, like, one circle. And the next column, there might be, like, three circles. But they all have arrows going to that one circle. And then there's another column, and it has maybe five circles. And so on. And then, so they kind of get larger to, like, five or six circles. And then they shrink back down to one. And these things are called layers. That, the one company that won that competition in 2012, I think they had six layers. And it took them 6 days to train their AI model on top high-end hardware. So when I say this stuff is like really hard to do because we didn't have the computer power, that's what I mean. 6 days of nonstop work. I don't know about you guys, but the way I do a lot of my work is trial and error. So I do something, I test it, I'm like, oh, let's turn this a little bit down or turn this a little bit up. Like when you're baking, like maybe I need a little bit of sugar, right? But imagine if you have to train it, wait 6 days, then make your change, wait six more days. Like, it just takes a lot of time. And so the compute power just wasn't there. And that was 6 days of training in 2012 on this thing that's six layers deep. Well, the one that won it last year is like 250 layers deep. Mm-hmm. It is crazy the amount of work like computers have to do this. Though we're making specialized hardware for it now, which is really nice. Does anybody in the computer world there's a company called like NVIDIA, they make graphics cards.
Yeah.
And their processors work very differently than your standard computer processors. And so a computer processor might have like 8 cores, which is essentially like 8 small processors. Well, my NVIDIA card has 2,050 of them. Ooh, so, like, you can put a task on each one of those things, and it makes them calculate so much faster. So, here's what I consider the fun stuff. Okay. So, what are these things doing inside? If you guys remember your high school algebra, I'm sure everybody does, right? But you end up with equations that might look like 2x squared plus 3x plus 5. Okay? That's an easy standard equation of like a parabola. Of course, these equations inside these deep learning things are very big and they're multidimensional and you're dealing with other things. But for simplicity, pretend you have like 2x squared plus 3x. And what happens is that those numbers in front of the x's, those are called the weights. So all these things are doing, or they're trying to adjust the numbers in front of the x's to get the best result of this model. So at first what they do is they just randomly pick numbers. So they just say, all right, let's put 2x squared plus 3x. And then they see how well that does, and then they adjust it. But they don't just adjust it randomly. There's several techniques. And adjusting those numbers, those weights, that's called optimizing. So I think we can all picture this. So like pretend like you're holding a bowl. So to optimize these things, they use something called gradient descent a lot. If you're holding a bowl, and you just like imagine a point on the side of the bowl, okay? And my goal is to walk that point to the very, very bottom of that bowl. So what you do is you're on that bowl, that edge of the bowl, you just look around and you say, where is this bowl going down the fastest? You know, where's the biggest slope down? You say, okay, there it is. Then you take another little step. Then you do it again. Where is this bowl going down the fastest? Then you take another little step. And you just do this until you get to the bottom of the bowl. And once you're at the bottom of that bowl, what happens is that's when that model is most accurate. You've optimized it. And I think maybe even a better way to picture how this works is picture like two mountains, and at the bottom of these mountains where they combine is a river. If I'm on that side of one of these mountains, my goal is to get to where that river is. I take a small step in the most downward direction I can, then I do it again, and I do it again, do it, and then I do it again until I get to the bottom. But here's the thing, if the step, that the bigger the step size you take is like really important. If I take really, really small steps, I'm going to be taking steps forever and may never get there. But what happens if I take a really, what if my step is now covering 50 yards at a time. So I take one step, I get near the bottom, and then I step clear over the river. Mm-hmm. So now I've never made it to the bottom. I'm just going to keep walking back and forth. So you can't, you've got to make sure when you're taking these things, you take small steps, but not too small that you'll never get there, because we don't have the processing power for that, and not too big that you're going to walk by it. Anyways, that's how like they optimize these things. And if you've ever taken a calculus course, they use something called gradient descent and partial derivatives and all kinds of fun stuff. The good news is like somebody's already made these computer libraries and oh, you already do it. So it's not like I have to write this. I just use somebody else's hard work because that stuff is hard, man. Another like example of deep learning where it's been used a lot is you might see it on like facial recognition.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the same thing. They take 1,000 pictures of Grant and they learn his face, and then they use an algorithm, a deep learning algorithm. When they're done, then they have this model. And now they can take a picture and put it in this thing, and on the other end it's going to say this is Grant or this is not Grant. It's the same thing. It's just facial recognition. One thing that might pop up in your heads, because I'm sure you guys are all curious, I'm curious, is like, this is a picture. How do I put a picture in there? Like, it's not a number. Computers like numbers. All a picture is if you take a picture and you zoom in, and you keep zooming in, and you keep zooming in, and you keep zooming in, when you get to the bottom of a picture, and let's say it's a 10 megapixel picture. I'm sure you guys might see 10 megapixel a lot. I think that means like 10,000. So there's 10,000 dots just across that picture. So all a picture is a bunch of dots. And all those dots are, is they're called RGB. So they're a shade of red, a combination of red, green, and blue. And it goes, so you can say, all right, this dot has 25 blue, 16 red, and 100 green, whatever. And you just take it and you put it in this like table, and now you've digitized that picture. It's just a bunch of numbers, and then you can pass that in these algorithms. And they do similar things for words. Words are a little more tricky. These are supervised learning, but here's the cool, where people think they're going to get with general intelligence. They have this bot, DeepMind. DeepMind is a company run by Google. They have these bots where they watch somebody playing an Atari game. Atari is a really easy game because it's just a stick with one button coming out of the box. So it watches it and it learns how to play this one game. And all of a sudden, this bot is now playing games at a superhuman level. They've been able to take that thing that's been trained on that one game and test it on every Atari game, and it's played like 800. Yeah, like it's something like 80% of the library it can play better than these levels. So, like, it's made some mystical, magical math formula that can now like be generalized to every game. That's pretty cool. And that's not supervised learning. They call that recurrent because like it doesn't know how to do any of this stuff and it doesn't have any past data. But each time it does something good, you give it a little pat on the head. In a video game, a little pat on the head is giving it some points, right? That's how like these robots work. They don't know how to do anything. They do some stuff. They give them a little reward. And it's just like how you raise your kid. You know, they do something good, you move on. Okay, so that's pretty much as deep as I want to get to in this AI stuff. So let's get the... And you have, I think to really get a grasp on how these self-driving car things work, I think you have to like have the base understanding on how that stuff goes. So, self-driving cars. There's a couple different scales that they scale these things out, these self-driving cars, and they have different levels. The one that's most accepted is this level. And it's 0 to 5. In case you don't know this, everything in the computer world is like starts at 0. It goes 0, 1, 2, 3, so they go in 1, 2, 3. I don't know. Computer scientists like zero-based stuff. But there's 5 different levels, well, 6 different levels if you count 0. Level 0 is absolutely no autonomous driving ability at all. that's 100% human. Everything that car does is based on you. And you can't, there's no help anywhere. Level one is the car will help you with one task. And this, almost everybody has this thing in their car already. The easiest one out there is just cruise control. Almost everybody has a level one car at this point. Cruise control, hit a button, and that one task it helps you with is to maintain speed. So then there's like a slightly better cruise control, right? Because they have adaptive cruise control. It's still considered level one, but what adaptive cruise control does is it looks at the car in front of you and it'll slow you down or speed you up based on what they're doing. So that's level one. Level two is where things start to get a little interesting because it's that cruise control, so it helps with two tasks. Not only can it help you maintain speed, but it can now stand in its lane by all by itself. There's several cars out here that do that. I'm going to talk a lot about Teslas now throughout this thing because they're pretty amazing stuff. And I think they're kind of leading the charge. But Teslas right now, they do this. They have Mercedes do too. But Tesla's called autopilot. You're driving in certain situations, usually on a highway, and you hit a button, and you can take your hands off the wheels completely now. And it'll drive itself, it'll maintain your lane, and it'll slow up and speed down as you want. So level two is it'll do two tasks for you. Level three is pretty much where we're at now as far as today. If you go out and buy a Tesla, what can it do? Level three is not only can a car stay in its lane and maintain the proper speed that it needs to, but it now is smart enough to switch lanes on its own.
Oh, God.
Wow.
Yeah. So it knows that you want to go 75 miles an hour, and it's looking at the car in front of you, and it knows that it can pass it. So it gets over, it passes, and it does its thing. These are out there. Tesla calls it enhanced autopilot. I don't remember what Mercedes calls it, but this is pretty much where we're at today. Now, Teslas have, every car Tesla sells now has the hardware necessary to go beyond this, though. So what they're doing is they're seeding the market. They're seeding their cars. So when they have their software ready to go beyond this, they can just hit a button, and it'll send a software update, and their cars will be ready to go. So the next step, level four, is full autonomous driving, but with one restriction. So I said there is a level five. So it's full autonomous driving in certain regional locations. So they call it geofencing, where maybe in the city on a highway you have full autonomous driving, but on that back road on the side of a mountain you don't. So that's level four. And level five, they just clean that up. They say, okay, level five is complete autonomous driving, and that's the point where cars don't even have steering wheels. We aren't actually that far away from that. Like I said, Teslas already have all the hardware. Teslas already have the hardware completely on them to do full level five already. And all they're doing right now, you remember how earlier I said you need lots of data for these deep learning network things? That's all they're doing. People are driving on level three on Teslas right now, and things are happening. They're taking pictures, they're collecting information, and they gather that information, and they're sending it back to Tesla. And Tesla is using that stuff to make their full level five stuff. Apparently, everybody seems to be skipping level four and claiming that they're going to go right to level five. There is a target market date. So Tesla's always been like the outlier, the company from ahead of everybody else. But when is GM, when are Ford, when are Volkswagen going to do this? There is this magical year that everybody has listed out as the year they're going to release their stuff. You can just, when you go buy your new Chevy Bolt, it's going to be ready to go. And that year's 2023. That's like 5 years away. I mean, that is actually not that far away. So their goal in the next 5 years is to release fully autonomous driving vehicles. I would be surprised that the politics of the situation would allow it to be steering wheel less yet. And I would bet for probably another 5 years after that or something, they're probably going to require a licensed driver behind the wheel. But my whole journey in the self-driving car stuff kind of started with a bet with my father-in-law. I have a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old, and I told him, I was like, I'll make a bet with you that my kids will never have to drive a car. And the deeper I get in this world, the more obvious it is, because in 5 years, these car dealerships are aiming to release these things. In 10 years, like, they're going to have 5 years of selling these vehicles. So I think maybe people say I'm being optimistic, but I think we're closer there than people might think. And I think it's going to be shocking for a lot of people there. I know Chevy, they sell a car called the Chevy Bolt, not with a V, but with a B. And that car, I think they're going to start doing what Tesla does, which is have all the hardware already on the car required for this stuff, and just release software updates as we go. So once again, level zero, nothing. I think Wikipedia has these like good little short descriptions. Level one, they consider hands-on, because you're steering still, but you don't have to do pedal. Level two, hands-off, because it stays in your lane. Level three is eyes off, because now it's smart enough to switch lanes for you. Level four, they call mind off. And once you start at level four and level five, your life can change, because you don't have to be paying attention when you're driving. I imagine car designs will probably start changing after these things become in the market, because you can be playing your tablet, you can, doing whatever you need to do. You're not going to need to pay attention to the road. I know that sounds crazy, but...
It sounds scary.
It does, right? It does. But these things all perform at, like, a much... So, wait, I've got a thing here after the hardware. So I talk about, like, the safety of these vehicles right now.
Mm-hmm.
And the Waymo, if you don't know what Waymo is... So if you know about Google Structure, a couple of years ago, Google restructured itself, so... They actually have a parent company called Alphabet, and that parent company runs Google, and then it runs the other Google-owned companies. And Google actually spun off their own company called Waymo, and Waymo's their self-driving wing. Well, Waymo has, I think it's been like, I don't know, like 5 million or something like 10 million miles of self-driving cars on California streets, and it's been 14 accidents. 13 accidents were caused by people... They were not at fault. I think something like 12 of them, they were rear-ended. It's crazy. So only one of those 14 accidents in like the last 5 years with over those million miles were their fault. And they totally owned up to the one. It was like turning red on red. And it was a tricky situation. But it's been resolved since then. And then I think it's been a couple of years since they've had an accident. So let's talk about some of the hardware this stuff they require to make this stuff work. They do... So when I was talking earlier about how Tesla collects data and sends it out, I've done this in these classes I've taken. It's called behavioral cloning. So basically, I have this little simulator. I can drive my car around. And in front of this car is a little camera. And a camera is nothing but a lot of pictures, right? So a camera that's 30 frames per second is... It's just literally taking 30 pictures per second. So it's just constantly taking these pictures, and each picture it takes, it's going to record some information and tie it to the picture. So it's going to record how fast the car is going, what the steering angle of the car is, and maybe how the braking, whatever. It's going to record everything. But for the sake of this talk, we'll just say steering angle. So it takes a picture, and it puts a steering angle. This is exactly the data situation we talked about earlier. We have our information and our label. And our label this time is just steering angle. So I take this car, I drive it around the track for like 15 minutes. And so you end up with 30 frames per second for 15 minutes. So you end up with a lot of data. And I put in my algorithm and I make a model. And now I say, okay, car, I'm not going to drive you anymore. You, every time you take a picture, put it in your black box and get the steering angle spit out for you and use whatever thing it tells you to do. And After only 15 minutes of driving, I did that, and that car is able to drive itself around its track completely now. But here's really, the really cool thing is I take this model now, and I take it to a track it's never seen before, and it can drive itself around that one too. I did this in 15 minutes on my own in a simulator. Like, I can't imagine what these people with hundreds of PhDs from Carnegie Mellon are doing. I don't know if you know why I said that. I'm sure you guys have all heard of Uber at this point.
Yeah,
Uber's self-driving wing is in Pittsburgh, and they steal a lot of Carnegie Mellon PhDs. I think they're the closest one here. There's actually like this whole test track up in Michigan somewhere too. They had like they built a city just for self-driving cars to test them out. I'm not exactly sure where it is. I think it's in Michigan though. Anyways, okay. So back to the hardware. So that approach I was talking about, they mostly use cameras for that one, for what I was doing, and I was only using one camera. And the problem with using one camera, it's hard to tell how far away things are. If you're using two cameras side by side, now I can do some calculations, and I know how far the car away from me is. And this is a technique that Tesla uses. I call it camera first. So the first and most important sensor they have on their car are their cameras. And these Teslas that are coming out, that are out now, that are fully autonomous, that are with a software update to be fully autonomous, they have 8 cameras. And if I was a betting man, I bet they have 2 on the front, 2 on the back, and 2 on both sides. So they need them in pairs so they can tell how far away things are. Cameras are really nice because they're cheap, they're dirt cheap, and they can see really far away. They can see, I think the Tesla cameras can see 250 meters in front of you. And if you're driving 80 miles an hour, 250 meters in front of you is a pretty big deal. You need to see as far as you can. But that's not the only thing they use. They use radar. Radar is just the bouncing of radio waves and making measurements.
Yeah.
The bad thing about cameras are bad weather, rain, snow, they become hard to use. So you need some other backup sensors for that. So they use radar. Radar is unaffected by rain. It bounces right through it. So they map the world around them with radar, mostly in the front of them. Actually, Tesla's sensors are so good now. Elon Musk, who runs Tesla, said they can bounce radars underneath the car in front of you and read the car in front of it. So they bounce it on the street underneath, and it comes back, and you can read. So, I mean, that's obviously above human. I don't know the license plate. They don't have license plate, but like, I can only see the car in front of me, essentially. Radar's nice. It's cheap, but it's got some disadvantages. It's a little slow. It does have a pretty good distance. It goes like 100 meters or something like that. The next sensor they use a lot is just, instead of bouncing radio waves like radar, they bounce sign. They bounce just sound waves off things. Sound waves look really nice. If you look around a lot of new cars now, you'll see these little plastic circles on them. That's probably a sonar ultrasonic sensor. And these things are really nice, but radar's a lot faster. These things are nice because they can see the environment around them in detail, but they can't go very far. But they can tell you if a car's beside you, though, or if a car's directly behind you. The Teslas have 12 of these around them. So, and they're really cheap. And when I say they're really cheap, if you're into like electrical engineering, you can buy these things for about a quarter a piece. I mean, they are really cheap. The next technology, and this one is sort of like Tesla against the world, because Tesla, they do not use these. But everybody else, I said Tesla is camera first, everybody else is this technology first. And this technology is called LiDAR. So radar uses radio waves, ultrasonic uses sound waves, LiDAR uses light. Uses lasers.
Mm-hmm.
So what's nice about lasers and light is they travel really, really fast. And they travel really far. So you can get a great sense of the world around you. But there's some major disadvantages to it. First of all, it looks really stupid. These self-driving cars, they have, it looks like a 10-gallon Mexican hat on the top. It is just like this outrageous dome. Because the way these things work, they have basically two layers. The top layer is this spinning laser, and it's spinning multiple times per second. I don't remember. Like, let's say 20 times per second. It's probably even more than that. It's really fast. And it's just spinning, and it's shooting lasers, and it's bouncing on stuff. And then there's another layer under that. It's just mirrors. And it's just calculating how long it takes to get those things to bounce back and hit the mirrors. So they do look dumb, but they give you the best map that you could expect with the technology. But they don't see through rain, and they don't really see through. So bad weather, instead of seeing 200, 300 meters out, now we're looking at 50 meters. That's a problem. The other problem with LiDAR is it is really, really expensive. Radar, camera, these things, those other things are super cheap. They're insignificant. When you're buying a $30,000 car, those things are insignificant. LiDAR, I looked online, the cheapest one I could find right now is $8,000. Yeah, could you imagine buying a car and like, if you want the fully autonomous one, you have to pay, because if you're going to pay $8,000, if the car companies have to pay $8,000, they're going to charge you $15,000. You're not going to pay $20,000 extra. And this is a known problem, and these companies claim they're fixing it. One company claimed that they're going to have a new way this LiDAR works, and it's going to be $250, but it's still this huge, ugly thing. And I don't think we need it. A lot of people who do these things every day, they think eventually all we will need is the camera, and we'll be using that technique I talked about with the red driver and the simulator. Maybe if we have better cameras that look for different color spaces, I guess. Now, all these things, you have all these sensors now, and here's the hard part. You have to have a computer to plug those sensors into to process all this information. And this is why cars 10 years ago couldn't do this. We had cameras 10 years ago. We had radar. These things aren't new. But the computer, powerful enough to take all this information in and put it in these models and spit out answers and giving your car enough time to act on them, they didn't exist until now. And what I mean now, like last year, it was questionable. This year, they're better. That company I talked about, NVIDIA, they make specific hardware for that. And when I said that had like 2,000 processors on it versus having like 4 in your regular computer, these ones are made specific for this task, and I think they probably even have another 2,000 on it. It's insane, the hardware required for it. Mm-hmm. But that box is probably $2,000, so that's expensive too. Mm-hmm. Of course, these things all get better when you start selling a million of these things, right? Mm-hmm. And I think I remember reading that box, all these things plugged into that NVIDIA makes. The box, this version this year versus last year, is like 100% faster. So if you can scale that out 4 or 5 years, hardware's catching up. And I think that's why a lot of these people are confident that these things are going to be around much sooner than they might think. Okay, so the advantages to self-driving cars, I think, are pretty obvious. It definitely gives people that are visually impaired an opportunity and actually freedom that you never have. Sadly enough, I don't get to see Brandon enough, and we live in a... Yeah?
Yeah, if you have a vision problem and you get a self-driving car, and let's say you can't see well enough, do you tell this car where to go and it automatically goes there, or what?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, so, exactly. Actually, it's even better than that. It'll learn that when you get in the car at 7 in the morning that you're going to work.
Question?
Yeah.
Will there be a talking component to this thing so that you know
That's the accessibility.
100%. I don't think this is... Not only will it learn your patterns, but if you're using something like Google Calendars, it has access to your calendars. It knows where you're supposed to be, when you're supposed to be there.
Oh, that's scary.
And it's, it is, but it's also great. It's that, that exchange of like giving up some privacy to gain all these things.
And that's the part, well, first of all, I don't believe there's such a thing as privacy anymore. I mean, there's so much out there on all of us.
Right.
But second of all, that's the part that ACB and organizations like that are working on, is to make sure that as this stuff is developed, that it is accessible to us. So, and the other part that, that Nico mentioned is the political realities of this. As we all know, the government takes forever and a day to catch up. And so, you know, he said it's probably for another 5 years after the stuff comes out that they're going to require a licensed driver. That's the part, that's the part that ACB is working on right now, is to make sure that we're not excluded from getting licenses when this stuff is available.
Right.
Yeah, if you ever get any more information, I'd love to hear about that. Yeah.
Well, I think there'll come a time, too, if this really comes about, that you'll have people who won't even know how to drive.
Exactly. Well, like I said, my kids who are 4 to 5 years old.
And we have that now.
Well, yes, probably.
They are steering. Yeah. At least they won't be running us all over in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, are my 4 and 5 year olds ever going to learn how to drive? Like, are they going to? I don't know.
Yeah.
I
believe on political always takes a while to catch up.
Sure does.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, it's going to take a while because people are afraid because they you know, you go, well, I don't have control of my car. Yeah, that's better.
So, I read a funny anecdote on that. Uber has self-driving cars, and there's a lot of those people who have these fear of like getting. They don't trust this machine, and they're like, okay, I wonder how long it takes these people to trust these machines. They put them in a self-driving car that drives them around. It was like 1 to 2 hours, and they're like, all right, I'm good.
Yeah.
So it's like they just have to use it once to gain that trust.
I've seen very little in the articles that I've read until recently, and I'm wondering how seriously it's taken about. I see two things. I see there almost has to be a network of way for the cars to communicate with each other. Mm-hmm. And then the big question in my mind is hacking and crashing the system.
Yeah, so there are standards that they're working on for cars to talk to other cars. But Tesla doesn't care about that. They don't need that. That's an added value, right? That's something that's going to make things better. It's going to be nice. And I think what's going to happen is we're going to be able to drive cars as of today with these self-driving cars. But once they start talking to each other, cars are going to be able to go faster. They're going to be more efficient. They're going to deal they're going to need less space. They're going to be more exact. They're going to change things. Even in a self-driving car, dropping on the highway and going 100 miles an hour, like that's
something's coming out of that,
right? Yeah.
What is the cost now?
So right now, to get a Tesla, it's a Tesla Model 3. That's the cheapest Teslas they sell. And remember, Tesla is a luxury brand for sure, right?
Yeah.
But their Model 3 starts at like $30,000. Okay.
That's not bad.
That's a car. Well, a lot of cars are. So that's their Model 3. But what they do is they say, okay, if you want, they give you that level 2 that for free that stays in the lane and accelerates and decelerates based on the car in front of you. Mm-hmm. If you want the enhanced autopilot that's level 3, they charge you $3,000 extra for it if you download the software. But all the car has the hardware for it already. But if you want the fully autonomous one, and this is the one I think is great, is that something like 70% of their customers this year will pay for a fully autonomous vehicle, even though they're not expected to be out for another 2 years. But I think that's like $5,000. So he's charging $5,000 premium. But in reality, if you were to go buy a Tesla Model 3 with fully autonomous features, you're probably looking at like $40,000. But when Chevy and Volkswagen and those companies start selling, I would definitely expect the price to drop.
It will.
Yeah.
Well, it's like a new truck these days is $50,000.
Yeah. Are these cars, these Teslas you're talking about, are these like standard-sized vehicles, or are they like these little...
Teslas look like just like your standard-sized vehicle. Yeah. I have a Chevy Impala. They have the models that look like that. Their Model 3, which is their other models are like $100,000, so really high-end luxury, but their Model 3, I would say, is probably more like a Malibu size. They're a mid-size car.
So they're like a 5-passenger or 6-passenger?
Yeah, exactly. Now, they have, like, an SUV where it's really fancy and costs lots of money. But I can imagine in a decade that almost all cars have this feature. I don't even think I'm imagining it. Like, this is going to happen.
What is Tesla based out of?
Tesla is based out of California.
I mean, they're American.
They are an American company. They're made in Fremont, California, I believe. That's where their factory is. They're run by Elon Musk. But they are a California company.
Cool.
One of the interesting things I read, which tells you how much software can do, was after the hurricanes, Tesla put out a temporary fix that increased the range of the cars by changing the specs of the battery.
They're full electric vehicles. And what he's talking about, so what they do is they say, okay, I'm going to take 15% of that battery and I'm going to save that as, like, let's not really drain it past that point, because batteries work weird. You don't want to drain them to 0% all the time. So they sent a software update to let the people who have electric vehicles drive that extra 15%, which is pretty cool.
Okay, I got a question.
Yeah.
We live out in the country.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So, you know, you're talking, you know, electric car, plugging it in, and how much, or how far can you go?
300 miles on the current, I think the current Model 3 Teslas, I think, get between 250 and 300 miles on a charge.
Okay.
Which is fine for 99.9% of daily driving.
But what's to say down the road that the road network isn't built with charging capability all along?
I have seen demos of this, yeah.
You go, and as you're going, just like your alternator charges up your car battery now, as you're going along, that electric vehicle is constantly being recharged.
Well, that actually... even hybrids do that. They have the braking on them. When you brake, they recharge things, so they have regenerative road braking. But I have seen smart roads that charge things. If any of you guys have a cell phone that has the Qi wireless charger on it, I've seen things saying basically when you park in a parking spot, and we'll talk about parking, that it'll be essentially a wireless slow trickle charge while you're parked for your electric vehicle. Mm-hmm. And I don't think there's anything tying electric vehicles to fully autonomous cars by any means. Gas vehicles will be just fine for that, too.
Sure.
I think just right now there seems to be that relationship, but there's no requirement for it. So I mentioned parking. This is one of the major advantages, I think, that people underestimate for self-driving cars. Right now, if you go to the store, if you go to Walmart, and you park in a parking lot in front of it, well, Tesla's already had this feature. It's called like Park Check or something. But you go and you walk into the restaurant and you tell your car to go park itself. Okay?
No.
That already does now.
A lot of valets.
But think about the impact of this. If all of a sudden parking lots, we don't have to have a parking lot in front of every store. We can have a parking garage that's shared by 50 stores down the road.
Sure.
Like, that changes the landscape of things pretty significantly if all of a sudden parking lots can be centralized.
Not to mention you don't have to have space for people to get out of their car and you just wedge them together, right? You know, 2 inches apart, line them up, and it'll save a lot of
time. Some people do that now.
Yeah.
Well, it's like those parking, like if you go to like event parking where they have valets. Mm-hmm. They put them in their garage, and you have to have somebody go get it because they have to move like 3 cars to get to your car.
Yeah.
Weren't they driver assisted for a while?
What's that? So the summons feature and the park features in the Teslas are not driver assisted. The summon feature is basically I walk out of my house and my car knows I'm walking out of the house, it opens the garage door, it drives forward, shuts your garage door, and meets you in somewhere. You hop in your car.
Oh, boy. Really?
Yeah, that exists already. I mean, that's there. Boy. That's called summons. See, this is the thing. Like, people don't realize how far along we really are with this stuff already. Yeah.
When they train the cars, do they do gravel roads? She mentioned.
Country. Yes. They do. There is no requirement for cars to even have lines on them.
Okay.
How can that
to be?
When a tree goes down.
To, It can see it. It can see with the radar and the cameras. It'll know how to handle that situation.
What does software tell it to do then? Back up? Turn around?
I think it would probably look around to see if it can get around. If it can't get around, it would probably have to turn around and find another path, just like you would.
Okay.
What you're saying, it doesn't have to have lines on the road, like for say, like what Sears asked about gravel road. How can that be? I mean, there's nothing for it to indicate where the, I mean, other than the gravel.
The problem is like when you depend on lines, it lots of like sometimes the lines are yellow, sometimes the lines are red, sometimes they're dashed, sometimes it's really hard to do that. So you have to work your way around it. And the scary thing is when they put these things, or like that simulator thing I was talking about, when I put that in the model and it looks at that picture and it dissects it, nobody knows what it's doing on the inside. That's the scary thing. Like, nobody knows how it's handling it, but it knows that it's looking for all those situations. On that simulator thing I was talking about, well, I didn't have lines on the road.
What happens if you accidentally make a wrong turn, or you know how drivers, you know, they get lost on the road? How does it correct
itself? It won't
get
lost.
Well, it shouldn't. Right? If it's fully autonomous, right, it's using something like Google Maps to get there, but it would just reroute it. Like, what happens when your GPS and you get lost? It reroutes you somehow, right?
What if it's not on the map?
Right.
Well, there are cases where GPS has sent you to a lake. You know, so.
Well, I mean,
we don't use an Apple GPS. After maps.
Well, it's like, like I said, we live out in the country. You know, you come down our road, it's like my girlfriend lives like a side road off of our road. He has no name.
So I have a couple questions about this too. And I'm not quite, if you remember when I talked about the levels, I said level 4 was fully autonomous, but the geofence area, like for certain geolocations.
Mm-hmm.
And that everybody's claiming that they're going to be able to skip that level and go to full autonomous. And like I said, I'm not working on this stuff professionally, so I don't know how they're going to handle necessarily every use case. Mm-hmm. But if you're driving down a road that's not on the map, you know what? I bet Google might have been down that road, or Google satellites have seen that road.
But in other words,
or if you drive on the road yourself, if you drive, it's going to watch you.
It's like telling the car where to go. So if I say, I want to go to Kathy McLaughlin's.
Mm-hmm.
So it would understand that you're going to turn off this side road that, you know, is down and up a hill and around and all this kind of stuff, and it's going to know how to get there.
I would think so, yeah.
What's the speed on those cars?
Yeah, GPS and all that kind of stuff.
What's the speed on those cars right now?
Yeah.
What is the speed?
Actually, these cars, since they're level 3, they only work in certain situations at level 2 and 3, and those situations are highways. So these cars do go 70, 80 miles an hour. If you know anything about electric vehicles, they are very fast vehicles because they have instant torque. So if you ever look at the high-end Teslas, they go 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds.
Oh, okay.
It is incredible. They are very, very powerful cars.
Is this one make noise?
No, they're completely... And electric cars would not be noiseless, besides general road noise. But a gasoline car, which I said... There is nothing combined like locking in electric cars with autonomous vehicles, right?
Well, and that's why we're trying with ACB to get this quiet car legislation and regulations through so that there is some noise put on these things
right.
So that we can hear them. But but we won't be walking anymore, so we'll be driving, so who cares?
And if you're walking, the cars will just know you're there, and they won't run over you.
Well, I said too.
They're not like people. They'll know.
Also, yeah.
We got to stop there because there's a person there and I don't want to run over.
Well, the other thing too is that, the mindset is interesting. The other thing is somebody who was saying, well, how does the car know it's the right person? I could see where this could be. It would know that it's not the right person. Like somebody's trying to steal your car and it just wouldn't go. It just won't do anything.
That's an easy problem, actually.
And not only that, it will call
the police. Google knows who I am by my voice.
Wow.
It seems like the latest thing they're saying is that you may not even own a car.
Yes. So that's one of the negatives and positives about this whole thing, is when cars can drive themselves, think about cars that, like, the car that I own, I drive it to and from work most days. 90% of that time, that car is unused.
Mm-hmm.
It is not a good buy if you think about its usage. That's not a good purchase. So a lot of these things, like Uber, I don't know if you, Uber right now, every ride you take on Uber costs Uber money. Uber loses billions of dollars a year. They're not going to make money until they're fully autonomous, because what they're going to expect you to do is do like a subscription to them. So you're going to give them a couple $100 a month, and they're going to come and pick you up and take you places. You just hail it. It's come pick you up like an automatic taxi. So car ownership for general cars like will slowly turn into that in the next decade. It's going to become a subscription service. I still question, like, you're still going to have work trucks, things like that. You know, you can't get away, can't get rid of everything for sure. But that's what you're telling.
Well, you know, another thing, you know, I know the camera thing is going to be able to detect other cars and objects and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Unfortunately, we have deer that live out where we live.
Deer is easy to see. You know why deer is easy to see? Because it has heat.
Yeah.
Well, then that will be easy to detectable, but they are so stinking fast.
This car can see that deer way before you can see it.
Because it has the cameras on the side?
It's got the sonar, it's got your camera. That camera sees 250.
If your little kitty runs into the road, it'll
use infrared also. Does it use infrared also?
I don't know if they're using infrared, but these cameras, there's no reason. It's just a matter of cost to make them see other color spaces like infrared or HLD.
Well, along the cheap cell phones, that actually has infrared.
They can also react a lot faster than you can. They can react.
And 250 meters, remember, that's 750 feet. That's a long ways away. So it's looking at the deer 750 feet away from you. It knows way before you get here.
Well, and you think about it, he was saying about radar earlier. Aircraft have been using radar for years.
Yep.
I mean, that's how they're controlled. So.
Yeah, radar, it does see a long distance. And it's a good technology. The only problem is radio waves aren't as fast as lasers.
Right.
Okay, anybody got any other questions before we wrap up?
Thank you.
When they left the 4 and 5, are they going to keep the learning aspects?
100%. Never stop learning.
Okay. Of course.
Yeah.
What are they doing stupid?
Everything. What is that?
Tablecloth.
Well, you would hold all the good stuff.
So
would average out to get rid of the
convention bag and my cane.
So, all right. Well, if you guys have any questions, feel free to come up here. Yeah. Ask me whatever you need. But thanks.
Thanks. I've never seen.
Oh, yeah.